The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
I want to thank you for coming today and being a part of our session this afternoon on sending churches. And we appreciate the fact that you obviously have a vision for multiplication. So thank you for coming and being here today. Joining with me today, I'm Mark Gray. I work with the church planting team. It's Mike Pittman. Mike Pittman is a church planter. As I mentioned earlier today, Vertical Church in Lumberton. They're 6 years of age, have partnered in eight churches, other new churches already, and God's blessing their ministry in a great, great way. So we look forward to hearing from him in just a little while. And also Marcus Redding. Marcus Redding is just a dear friend. He's worked for a long time in different ways with church planting. Marcus was in central western North Carolina in a place called Hull's Grove. Did I say that right? Hull's Grove. It's where there are more cows than people. Right? More cows than people over there. But God just bless a church over there that wasn't focused on itself, that was very much focused on multiplication. And I'm going to ask Mike and Marcus to share their story in just a few moments about being a sending church, and I want you to hear from their heart today. Our purpose today, as we talk about sending churches, is that we will be conversational. So I know you'll look forward to conversing with them. We'll have a time for Q&A. We are most interested in making sure we're meeting your needs today. You've seen Savannah Parks. She's my assistant and keeps things flowing around here. And we appreciate her so much. And she's given you some evaluation sheets. All breakout sessions get these. But if you'll fill that out along the way and just leave it on the table in the back when you depart, it'll help as we prepare for next year. I have about 10 slides or so that I'd like to share with you as we set things up today in talking about sending churches. Why sending churches? Why should we multiply anyway? I mean, we have 4,300 churches in our convention. Some way we have a church on every corner, so to speak, and we do have a lot of Baptist churches. On the other hand, we have a lot of people in North Carolina, and a lot of people that need Jesus. Our studies are indicating that on any given weekend, only 21% of people are in any church. On any given weekend, only 21% of people in North Carolina are in any church. The depth of losses in our state, we believe there's about 5.8 million who are lost in North Carolina. 5.8 million out of a population of a little over 10 million. So the need, again, is significant. There are lost people out here. The Lord Jesus has called us to be fishers of men. Brother Milton talked about that some this morning in his message, did he not? The need for us to fish. And indeed, we need to be fishing. We've done some research and some studies and discovered the pockets of losses all across our state. We've identified the top 250 pockets of losses using an algorithm. And as you can see, they're broadly scattered. Most of these that you see here are in a 3-mile radius. Depending on population density, some are a little larger, and then there's some that are a mile and a half based upon density. So we're not talking about just in the big cities. Some folks say, well, pockets of losses, that's just in the big cities, is it not? No, that's not true. We have pockets of losses all across our state, and we believe that church planting, as you'll see in a moment, is one of the most effective ways to reach them. These pockets, these different color codes that you see here, purple, for example, are pockets of losses that are 71% to 75% that are unreached. And then the 66% to 70% are the red ones, et cetera. So the darker, the brighter, the greater depth of losses in those particular pockets. Now, I will say a lot of the depth of losses is in the urban center. That's really a true statement, but that's not where obviously all the pockets are. For example, if you take the top 10 pockets of losses in the state, 9 of the top 10 are in Charlotte. 9 of the top 10 are in Charlotte, but we see that in a lot of our cities. We have a wonderful resources available for you. We have Mission Insight, the company with which we have a contract, and we can provide for you wonderfully detailed demographics. It's free to you. You can go online and sign up and utilize it yourself. helping us to understand the depth of lostness and characteristics of those folks in not only the pockets of lostness, but even around your church or where God may be burdening you that you need to become a sending church and start new churches in those areas. So we have very, very detailed demographics. I humorously tell folks sometimes I think we know more about people than they know about themselves because we know what their preferences are. We have some studies I'll know whether a person is more prone to go to Red Lobster or to McDonald's. We know whether they're more prone to have arthritis pain or back pain. We know whether they're more prone to go to the gym or whether they're more prone to go jogging, so to speak. So it's incredible the detail that we have in understanding the fish to which God has called us to fish. The map that you saw a moment ago, you can go to our convention website, ncbaptist.org. And on the very front page, when it comes up, over on the right-hand side, you're going to see pockets of lostness, and you can click right there and you can zero in on any of those individual pockets there at the top 250. So right on the front page there of the convention, you can share that with your people. Andy Stanley said something that I find very strong. I quoted him this morning in the earlier presentation. Your church is perfectly designed to reach the people you're already reaching. Your church is perfectly designed to reach the people you're already reaching. Most churches have a sweet spot. I met with a new church planter yesterday at lunch, going to be in the South Raleigh area, and he and his wife were talking about their desire in reaching everybody, and he said, one day recently, my wife reminded me, she said, you know what? You know, the folks that we kind of gather around, that we kind of reach, they look a whole lot like us. And indeed, that's human nature. It's kind of the way it is. You know, we all have our friends, and I would guess most of your friends probably look a lot like you. And it's just the way oikos evangelism, as looking at the biblical term for that. But every church has a niche, an area they're good at reaching. And we shared this morning, in your area, if you're an evangelistic church and impacting losses in a great way in your community, then we don't need another church just like yours in that community. No, we need different kind of churches to reach the folks you are not best at reaching in your particular context. So rather than seeing your community like a pancake, which sometimes I'm afraid we do. I did for many years. Think about the folks around your church and your city. Think about it more like a waffle, more like a waffle. And in every one of these divots in the waffle, in every one of those divots, that represents a different population cluster. It might be a language group. It might be folks that are just really, really different. The church to which I alluded this morning that found the pocket of losses to their surprise down the street from the church. I know those folks in that pocket. I've been down to that pocket. Most of them live in mobile homes. You can tell they've been there for a long, long time. And many of them might have a high school diploma, but you know they have cars in their yards, and some of them don't have hoods on them, and some of the cars in the yards had wheels on them, some did not. They took a blue tarp from Kmart and made a carport, if you will. Now, those folks need Jesus, but they're intimidating by that socioeconomic strata. They tend to be intimidated by coming to a big church up the street that runs 1,000. Because it's not who they are. It's not where they are comfortable. That church would welcome them. It's that they would not feel comfortable attending a huge church like that, though it's a wonderfully good church. Two more slides. Effectiveness of new church plants. New church plants focusing on reaching unreached people. In church planting and talking about sending churches, we're not about swapping members. That's not who we are. God has called us to be fishers of men, and we take that very seriously. New churches reach new kinds of people and new kinds of groups. It may be cowboys in your area that nobody seems to be reaching effectively. You might start a cowboy church that specializes in that. We have a motorcycle church south of Raleigh, and they run about 400 every week. Now, I don't have enough tattoos to qualify to be a part of that church. It's a unique church, but they're really good at reaching motorcycle riders. They're reaching a new people group. The other churches in that community were not reaching. And new churches baptize people at three times the rate of an existing church. That's a proven fact. 11.7 per 100 resident members. Existing churches will baptize about 3.4 per 100 resident members. Now, churches that multiply. I alluded to this earlier today. In your seat, there's a little business card size card that has this data on it. Worship attendance increased by 22% over 5 years for churches that indeed multiplied. Financial giving to the primary partner, to the sending church, increased by 48%. designated giving to missions, that's Annie, Lottie, NCMO, Association, all those kind of things, increased by 77% over the same time period for those who became a sending church. That's, I call that God's math. Ah. Here we go. So, what is a sending church? Sending church partners with a new church plant in prayer, participation, and or provision, taking responsibility for the plant until she is self-sustaining, self-governing, and self-propagating. So the goal is not to hang on long-term. It's like raising a child. You raise them up, you teach them about Jesus, you disciple them, and then you send them on their way. And that's what we're all about as we think about being a sending church and taking responsibility for being a new church in a cluster of unreached in a particular community. So what I'm going to do now is ask Mike and Marcus to share something of their story about being a sending church. Just give us a brief overview of what that was like. And then I have a question or two I'd like to ask, and then we're going to open up and let you ask questions of what your needs are today that we can make sure we meet them. Who wants to go first?
Our journey is becoming a sending church really began with just the journey towards church planting in general. I was one of those guys working in an existing church and just always was fascinated. I was fascinated by church planting and church planters. And there came a point about 5 years before planting that I found a book that just kind of captured my fancy a little bit. I read it. It was a church planting book. And I was just kind of, and I started reading everything I could get my hands on about church planting. And one of the guys that I found myself reading a lot of was Bob Roberts out of, the Dallas Metroplex area. And Bob talked a lot about church planting movements around the world. Bob's ministry isn't just, they planted like over 100 churches around them over a period of time, but they also planted all over the world. And he was making the point that we have no church planting movements in America, and there hasn't been in hundreds of years, and the need for this. And so he just really planted in my spirit this thought that it's more than us planting a church. But Mark, I just felt like God was birthing in myself and the people that were kind of around me the desire to, how do we do that? You know, not just plant a church, but I think that if we plant a church, we want to be a church that will plant churches because Bob Roberts says we need church planting movements, you know? And that's kind of where the whole concept came from. And my executive pastor, I mean, we weren't a team yet, but we were praying together about planting a church. As we prayed, I talked about this a lot, and we just really felt like God was impressing us to be a church that planted churches. And just, we started out, we didn't have a name for our church and didn't have a plan or anything, but we felt like God was calling us. And I hope nobody takes us the wrong way, but we felt like God was calling us to repopulate southeastern North Carolina with gospel-teaching, life-giving churches. Because that's where we are, southeastern North Carolina. And, you know, all of the church planting works that I was seeing seemed to be around cities, seemed to be around the theology of the city, and I get that. But, you know, I'm not in a big city. And I just began to, you know, as Donnie and I were praying about this, we were like, yeah, but what about all these towns that are around us that really don't have, they've got some good gospel teaching churches, but not the kind of churches that anybody could come to. And that was kind of the differing issue there is kind of like, it's not that there's no gospel presence in these towns. They did have a gospel presence. But was there a gospel presence that a young kid, you know, with tattoos and piercings that they would feel comfortable coming into? And that's kind of my background coming out of the rock and roll world. That was where my background kind of lies. And just always felt like I want to be a part of churches that my old friends could come to, you know, and that was one of those things that just wasn't there. So we talked from the very beginning of our church, we talked about being a church that planted churches. When we had a core team, we talked about, you know, we're going to plant churches. When we had a launch team, we said, we're going to plant churches. You know, I believe on, I could probably go back and verify it, but I could be telling a story right now. I think on launch day, when I was preaching that day, I believe I mentioned in my message, yeah, we're going to plant churches. We're going to be a church that we're not just going to be about us, but we're going to be about others. And so we just had a goal that within the first 2 years of our church that we would actually plant. We didn't quite make it. It took us 25 months to plant our first church. But so we almost got there. So we missed it by a month. And that was really a logistic issue. But, you know, and we just, and that was it. We bit. And very early within our first 2 years, we took on our first church planting intern. A guy who was going to plant, had a vision to plant in Rayford. And about 2 months after him, had a college professor from UNC Pembroke who came to me, and he had a calling on his life. And, hey, man, talk to me about this church planting thing. And he came on with us as well, and he ended up going to Norfolk to plant. So it's just been a part of who we are from day one. We definitely want to have excellent churches where we are, but we also don't want to lose that missionary spirit that we see in the Scriptures and we see in the Book of Acts. I mean, it wasn't about a church. It was about the church.
Yes, at large. Yeah. Good. Great story, Mike. Thank you. Marcus, tell us your story.
Well, mine's honestly just almost the opposite. So I was not born and raised Southern Baptist. When God called me to ministry, I was running a jackhammer as a construction worker, and I had no clue, no education. And so the Lord just, in his wisdom, sent me to Fruitland, and I met guys that not only loved Jesus, but they loved me enough to help me really understand how Southern Baptists cooperate to try to reach others. So I started in Rutherford County, 15 people in that little mountain church, and I had no clue what I was doing. I'll never forget them calling saying, you know, are you interested in pastoring? And that's why I'm really more of a construction worker. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'd love to preach for you. So I started from there, spent about 6 years. We built a building. God blessed. It was wonderful. But then I moved to Western Lincoln County, and the church was about 100 years old. They worshiped about 80, and the Lord just began to bless. I mean, we had a very strategic discipleship. We looked at discipleship short-term and long-term. And so back then, what we called our short-term was a year process. So if someone came to the church, we walked them through what we believe it means to be a disciple. And so the church not only was growing, but I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. So I didn't know. I was aggravating the convention staff. You know, I didn't know how to staff a church or lead a staff. None of them knew how to build anything, so I didn't know what to do with them. But we literally got up. Once we crossed about 700 in worship, we had already built a building. We'd gone back to two services. I already had the plans on my desk to build the next building. And so Mark Gray, we met a church in our community that was dying, very large facility. And some of the guys that God was sending to us, they could preach better than I could. So I was trying to find them opportunities. And so we went to this little church that was about to fold. And we said, look, let us help you. It won't cost you anything. I'll send you a pastor over there, and we'll work with the state convention. You got a whole family. And so I was supposed to do a wedding, but I was going to meet with Mark Gray and those three guys that were left at that church. And I will never forget. So I was thinking, this is going to be my handoff. You know, we've been helping these folks, and now I'm going to give it to Mark. And so Mark walks in, asked the guys to share their heart, and maybe 30 minutes, they were talking, and, you know, so they kept bragging on our church family and what we had done to help them. And so Mark says, well, I thought I was coming to try to help you folks, but this may really be a good, great opportunity for a merger. And I thought, what in the world is wrong with you? It made me so mad. I thought, you moron, I did not ask you to, you know, I don't want to keep control of this thing. I don't have anything to do with it. So I had to go to my meeting, and I thought, what is he going to tell them after I leave? And long story short, we did merge with that church and brought them in. There's a lot of stories I'd like to tell with that. But what happened, Mark gave me a book. So in the interim of having that meeting and us actually merging, he gave me a book about, becoming a multi-site congregation. And, y'all, we're out in western Lincoln County, and he's not kidding, there's more cows than people. And I thought, multi-site, that's about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. If I go to our people and say, we're going to become a multi-site church, they'll just kick me out. Because all I thought about was video casting and, streaming services, and I was going to preach at all the sites. But what God was really, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but what God was wanting us to do was raise up men and grow them up and honestly plant other churches. So here we had already paid money to have our next building drawn up, and I was already trying to raise support and get people excited. And God just burdened my heart that, why are you asking people to drive 30 miles out into the country? Why don't you go to them? And so that church was actually the first attempt we had made. Well, what I didn't know that in those years that God had helped us disciple people, we had all these folks that were discipled up and they were ready to reach others. The problem was we didn't have the opportunity because we were trying to do it all at one place. And so I foolishly, within about 26 months, we actually started three different sites, and it almost killed the church. that's not a good sending philosophy. But I didn't have sense enough to not send all of our best people out, and we did it all at once. So we went from about 700 down to about 300. Because we were just trying to plant churches. One of the problems, we did affinity-based ministry. So, Mark mentioned the motorcycle churches. We didn't start a motorcycle church because we wanted to. We just had a bunch of guys that loved Jesus and they rode motorcycles. But we had a huge motorcycle ministry, and I just partnered with Mike Beasley, and he said, look, I'll help you, and you can plant a motorcycle church. Well, now they're autonomous. They're running 200 on Sunday morning. Everything's wonderful. We had a skate ministry. I don't know if y'all know, probably about 10 years ago. Do y'all remember the video that we did at an annual meeting? And yeah. We actually had a skateboarder come up, and he skated off the platform. And yeah. I got hate mail, no joke. I'm not making fun. But people say, man, you're going to hell. That's not, you're trashing the church. That's not even a church. Awesome. But nobody was reaching those skateboards.
I was fired up when I saw it.
So, but that literally now is a standalone church that's doing its own thing. And so what I say that to say this, make disciples, and those disciples will go make other disciples however God designed them to. Don't start trying to get your church to go do things that everybody else is doing. I had guys calling me and saying, well, how would I start a skateboard church? And I would say, don't, unless God's giving you a bunch of skateboarders and a target of skateboard groups that you're supposed to go reach. Reach the people that God designed your church to reach. And how do you know who those people are? And the answer to that, I believe, is by the people God sends to you to disciple. Does that make sense to get them ready? You're just a preparing center to be able to send them out. So we had some amazing, just blessings. God used us like crazy. But the funny thing is that, my strategy, I did not say we're going to be a church planting church. I didn't have sense enough to have some strategy behind it, but God, in His amazing wisdom, He knew exactly what He had called us to do, and so He used that process to plant numerous churches. And I love church planting, but it scares me when we use that. Most of the time, people already have a preconceived idea about what church planting means. And if you do, then I would encourage you, as you think about maybe being a sending church, let the Lord define what that could be for you. So if you've already got a preconceived idea, kind of drop the, drop your guard and let God tell you what next step should look like. Mm-hmm. But we had an amazing journey. I've been away from the church just for 2 years, but all those sites now are autonomous and going well.
Awesome. So love it. Great, great stories, guys. Tell me, what was the impact? This comes up regularly. What was the impact upon you two in your sending churches? Was it a positive impact, negative impact? How were you impacted in your church by focusing over there and that new church over there? How were you impacted?
Well, I think I said mine quickly when I said I foolishly sent too many leaders the first time. And it really was because, my number one strength is achiever, so I really thought we had to plant everything all at once. So I did send out too many. I guess that's probably the only negative. Unless it would be, we had one congregation that was, we were a mostly Caucasian, the original campus.
Yeah.
And when we planted our first African-American church, I really felt like we all ought to look alike in worship style. And I made some major mistakes in that. And, I would say the curse would have been my lack of understanding about leadership needs, and then maybe some of my ignorance and not knowing when and when not to try to, mesh worship culture together when I should not have done that. So.
Culture is a powerful thing. What was the positive impact upon Hulsgrove, Marcus?
Well, I mean, honestly, just to release people that needed to be released to go do ministry, because when you're reaching a particular segment of people, God begins to bring others that could be reaching someone different than the folks in your church. If you don't send them out, they'll never really get to reach their full potential. And so if our folks that we sent out, if they would have stayed at the main campus, then they would have never been all that God really called them to be.
Wow.
Now, the Lord looked after us financially, blessed like crazy. So we really didn't go through financial struggles. But, our blessing was just to get to see people. I mean, I'm passing people in the hallway that came out of our church family and, are thriving in ministry now.
But wow. That's exciting. What's a positive impact upon your church?
Well, I say it like this. So, and I preface this by saying that, so one of my spiritual gifts is faith. I have the gift of faith. And one of my strengths is belief. So faith and belief, they work really strongly together, and the Lord has a way of teaching me things, through strategy and things like that. So when we were... you have to realize we started our church in a movie theater, okay? And so we weren't in the largest theater. We were in a kind of a mid-sized theater in this multi-theater complex. So we were doing two services in this smaller theater. And I had this, one of them was a volunteer service so that all of our volunteers could have a worship service. And then at 11 o'clock, we had a full service that... So the public wasn't invited to the early service. That was just for our teams, okay? But I had this dream that we could very quickly go to two services. I'm a two services proponent. I know a lot of people are afraid that we're going to split up the church and everything, but I think that giving people an option of when they go to church is good. And it also gives you a sit one, serve one opportunity. It gives your people the opportunity to go to church and serve the church all in the same morning, right? So we wanted to do this little thing here. We wanted to go to two services. So I remember it was about Easter. We launched in February, and it was around Easter. I started planting the seeds that this fall I want us to go to two services. And my kids' people were like, well, there's no way we'll be able to go to two services, because, we don't have enough workers. And I said, yeah, I realize that. I said, but I think we got a lot of people that are coming here right now. I'm sure that we could staff two services if we could. And, how it is. You're in ministry, right? They give you all the pushback. We can't do that. We can't do that. Yeah, we can. Sure, we can. We just keep on pushing a little bit. Finally, we came to summertime. I said, in September, we're going to two services. By the way, it's not like me up on high. This is a team. But, I said, we're going to two services in September. We don't have a team. I said, well, you better get a team because we're going to two services. So we did. We went, and sure enough, they put together a second kids team, and it was wonderful. And, of course, that meant kids were the biggest one because it took the most people, but we needed duplication in all of our areas. So the first place we duplicated was inside of our church, right? So when we went to the second location, of course, We had already been building teammates, and we'd been building leaders like that. And so when we were able to send some of our greatest leaders, the people who actually launched the church with us, went to our first plant. And they went over there, which obviously leaves a hole in your existing location. We knew that this was coming, and we were preparing for it, but I think it always hurts a little bit when you give away really, really talented people. But it also gives, if you're walking this thing through the right way, it gives people the opportunity to step up. I think sometimes when we don't have places for people to advance to, we keep some people from being able to advance into a serving opportunity. So the positive impact for us was when we sent like a core group of people to this new church, we had to have new people to work in the parking lot and work with kids and ushers, and we needed more sound people and all this, and there was a vacuum that was there. But our people understood, guys, this is an opportunity. This is not like, this isn't a bad thing. This is good. We have two places now where we're seeing lives changed on a weekly basis. And so, you know, but once again, and Mark, I think this is a tension to be managed. I think it's a tension to be managed with people, because it can go one of two ways. It can go negative. I can't believe, you know, that was the worst thing we ever did. We gave all of our good people away. Or we say, wow, we just literally almost doubled the number of people who are serving on a weekly basis. And I say that to say, you can do that before you become ascending church by starting a second service and increasing the opportunities for people to serve, you know, there. And I mean, that was where that preparation came. And I think, you know, at some point you come to a place where you realize that you're outrunning your leadership capabilities. And you have to work through that. And, okay, how are we going to make leaders?
You should work through
that. Are we going, I mean, we don't have a choice, you know, and how are you going to raise up teammates, and how are you going to raise up leaders? But it's all attention to be managed. I think it's something that we're held accountable by the Lord too. So it was positive. But it was something that had to be managed by the leadership, by our leadership team and our elders and our pastors, to be able to keep people looking at this through the right lens.
Yes. They had to have the vision.
Always had to have the vision. Yeah. And to be able to remind people, guys, this isn't a bad thing. This is awesome. I mean, we multiply. We didn't multiply, but we reproduced.
Yes.
And that place is doing well, and we're doing well. And, yeah, but we sure do miss it. Yeah, I miss them too, right? But look at what God's doing. And so, you know, it's one of those things that has to be managed. We have to keep why we do this in front of people and remind them that we don't gather on Sunday mornings as a family reunion. But we're here to run the Lord's game plan, the mission, right?
Yes.
To live this thing out that God's given to us.
Awesome. Tell me about your church planters that you two sent out. One of the questions that we get from time to time, you know, we want to be ascending church, but where do we find the planter? From where do they come? Where did you all find your planters very briefly?
I mean, all of ours literally were raised up through the church family, so we didn't bring in anybody from the outside. I'm not saying that's the way you should do it, but that's
good.
All of our planters came from within.
Okay.
A little bit of both. The first planter that we sent out was one of the founding pastors of our church. And when he joined our team, we knew that we would send him. He came from the next county. And when we joined, we said, well, that's how we get to Bladen County with him. And that wasn't like a secret. It was like, hey, we're going to send you when the time's right. And we knew that was going to be the first place that we went. I told you the first two church planting interns, one of them was a pastor from the next county over, not Bladen, but the other side to the west of us. And he had been thinking about church planting for a number of years and was coming out of a church situation. And I said, just come be with me. Come here and function with us and be a part of our team. And what do you want me to do? I said, man, I just want you to hang with me. You know, and so for a couple of months, as this guy was healing from his pain, he's coming out of a hurt situation. I just let him come and let our team love on him and just let him walk beside me and just to kind of observe my life and our team's life, and that's kind of how that relationship began with him. And the professor from Pembroke, it was kind of the same thing. He had been impacted by one of our other pastors who had really spoken into his life. By the way, he was an African-American from that had grown up in our city and had moved away and grown up in the projects Went into the military and then went to college and went to graduate school and went to seminary and comes back to teach in local university and loves Jesus with all of his heart and says, man, I want to do what you guys are doing, right? So that's how he came into our fold, and he was with us for close to 2 years. DJ up here on the front row, DJ is actually our pastor at our plant over in Pembroke, and DJ was actually a church planting intern with us.
Huh.
And so he did an internship with us and was with us for about 18 months, really, and just watched the Lord work in his life. So he didn't come up under us. I mean, nobody really comes up under us. We're 6 years old, right? But I mean, he coming out of Southeastern, when he came back home, he wasn't even really aware of us, right? And when he found he had attended Imago Dei when he was at school, and really wanted to be in a church kind of like that. But he went home to his home church and found out about us, and very quickly he was in our intern program. And,
wow.
And so he was raised up through that, and some other guys. Most of the other guys that we've sent, they have come to me in a time of just searching, and we just built relationships. And at some point, I just think it's my heart is to do for pastors what at a time in my life what I was desiring. And I was desiring a spiritual father, you know?
Yeah.
I was desiring somebody who would kind of pour into my life, you know? And I would have done anything to be able to just do what we've been able to do with these guys and to sit with them and to learn from them. I would have soaked that up, man, and would have done it for free. You know, I'd have figured out a way to pay for it. And so, I mean, that's just, so these guys that have planted with us, I mean, outside of the ones that were from the outside, I just saw them coming to me saying, man, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do next. Well, I mean, here's what we can offer you, which isn't much. It's like, we can offer you all kinds of training, but we have no money. But man, if you want to get a hold of what we're doing here, they love it, man, and so we pour into their lives, and we try to give them the foundation that they need to go out and try to send them as well as we can. We're so poor. We don't have much money to offer people, but we have a lot to offer our planters as far as what, I mean, the money seems to come. God takes care of his church, right?
Yes, he does.
God takes care of his church, but man, I tell you what, money wasn't our issue when we were coming up. We needed practical. We needed relationships and support. I mean, personal support.
And you started bivocationally, right?
Started bivocationally,
yourself,
absolutely.
Your whole team?
Yeah. My whole team. I started, this crazy story, but we started with four. It was myself and three other guys, and I told you my executive pastor, we had been praying together. We had been friends for a decade. Our kids had grown up together, and he had received the call after we were friends, and I was working in a church. He was a deacon in that church, and he ended up going to seminary and then taking a local church next town over, and we could just continue to be friends. And he was the guy that I could share the crazy stuff that I was scared to tell other people about what God was doing in my life. And just through the years, he was that guy in my life. And then I had two other guys that God had brought into our life, and we just prayed about what would it be like to do something that would reach the people that there are no churches in our area that were going to reach them. Because I had no intention of ever leaving the church that I was serving. I love that place. I continue to love that place. But God began showing me. God began sending people to our Sunday morning services. God was moving. People were being saved. But God started sending people to our services that were outside of our comfort zone. And I was watching our church struggle. And they welcomed everybody, and they were trying to welcome these people, but God was showing me that these are not their people.
Hmm. Yes.
And he started showing, because I was going, we don't need another church in our town. Why do we need any more churches? A church on every corner. And God started showing me, yeah, but we don't have a church for him.
Wow. Yeah.
We don't have a church for her. And that happened to me, you know, multiple times over about a year period, to the point that, I mean, and you have to hear me, deep down I wanted to plant a church, but I felt like it was me. Felt like it was me just trying to, I'm entrepreneurial. I just felt like I wanted to start something, you know? But, and God had to prove to me that it wasn't me, that he was actually doing a work in our lives. And it was a hard journey, but, you know, so we started bivocational, all four of us. We didn't mean to step out. We stepped out with nothing because we just felt like the Lord wasn't going to open up the door for our next step until we trusted him.
Wow.
And I didn't really realize how big a part of our story that would be, because our people, all the people that heard our story early on, I mean, they're crazy. I mean, these four pastors just quit their churches, and they, well, how are they supporting their families? They don't know. They're just, I mean, you know, we saved up money for a few months. It was like, okay, I'm good for about 2 months, you know, come on, God, you know. But that story played really well to people, as they said, man, they really believe what they're talking about, you know, and kind of, that was kind of the
experience that the more money you put into a new church plant, the less it produces.
Yes, can be.
You put into it financially, the less it produces.
Yeah.
You start them out and let them be responsible for their own self and their blessing.
God. Yes, absolutely.
We created a vacuum of leadership in our church. We started, I let it out 137 people, deacons, musicians, Sunday school teachers, youth workers, leadership team members, and there were 94 people left in our church. We let it out 137. But 1 year to the date, we had 204 in our church. They had 240 in their church.
And God, that's all we're talking about.
God's math. That's it.
You can't outgive God.
Come on. Right. Preach, God, man.
And he'll do it.
That's question right back here. Yes, sir.
Y'all help church plants financially?
We do a little bit, but not much. I mean, we're...
Pastors were bivocational at the church plant?
Well, a little bit of both. Sometimes the pastors are bivocational. Sometimes they fundraise. And, you know, we try to, up here, Mike Panina here on the front, Mike is our campus pastor at University of North Carolina at Pembroke. And Mike is currently, he came out of internship with us. And when he got to the end of his internship, he said, sat me down and said, man, God's not done with me here. And we weren't in a place to hire him. We certainly didn't want him to leave, but we couldn't hire him. And he said, man, I'm gonna fundraise. I'm going to do this. And we've put together a really good fundraising program where we can teach people how to raise funds and to be able to do that. And so a little bit of both. Depends on how driven the guy is, right? And I think it's good for. I'm not anti full time, but I think it's also, I think it can be profitable for a pastor who's coming out of a pastorate, going into a church plant. I think sometimes it's profitable for them to not be supported by the church, as crazy as that sounds, and I know that might rub some people the wrong way. But the greatest thing that happened for me after 11 years of full time ministry was not being Pastor Mike anymore, but being Mike, the guy that loves Jesus, who works in the video department at the university. I was just a regular person again. I'm going to tell you, I don't know how y'all feel about this. It was fresh air to me because I had worked in the church for 11 years and loved every moment of it. So don't hear, misunderstand what I'm saying. I loved the church. But it was awesome to be a regular person again for a minute, you know? And to just be able, it helped me to remember what it was like to be sitting in the congregation again. Because, you know, we sometimes forget what it's like to not have a day job, you know, and to not be in full-time ministry. And it, so, you know, I kind of encourage people to walk through that. And, you know, and I'm trying to, and Mark will be the first to testify, I'm like the guy who's like going, wait as long as you can before you start having services. Because, you know, I want people, listen, if you have to get a job for a little bit, hey, let's walk through this thing and let's really pray through this and coach this thing upright. Let's prepare you well to plant.
Yeah, one more question. How would you guys see you as a pastor, us as a pastor, about going across town and taking on a church on life support and taking that church on as pastor too and trying to help that church across town to do that. Being full-time in the ministry and not wanting to go back to...
Got two minutes. Marcus, you want to start?
Well, I mean, I'll just say there. Quickly, one thing I would do, I don't know what you're thinking, so there's probably a scenario in your mind, but that's why I believe that we as a convention, I really wish pastors would come together with the convention and help situations like that. Now, our model was multi-site, but it wasn't so we could keep campuses. It was so we could use the contribution of the whole, and I'm not talking about dollars, but people as well, to be able to do what God's called us to do. And I think there are dying churches that if we all would come around them, we really could help them to come back to vibrant congregations.
Yeah.
That's quick, but that's what that's I would good. Say.
And I like, and I know he's done that as well. I'm waiting for the day when we'll be able to do some church mergers, and we haven't had any. Some of my friends have done a really good job with that. But, you know, when I'm thinking about a church merger like that, the only way that I would want to do that would be is if that church realizes where they're at and they understand that this is a replant. Because I don't know that outside of doing some sort of replant where they understand that this is almost like a rebirth of sorts, it's kind of hard. It's not much. It wouldn't be much different than them just hiring a new pastor, that they're just going to want to control him and want to continue down the path that they're on. And I think they have to understand that they want our help when we come into those situations and do that. So everybody I know who's replanted well, it kind of was like, okay, we're really restarting this. Y'all get this, right? Isn't that basically what happened with y'all? I mean,
new DNA.
You have to have new DNA. Otherwise, what put them in that position will keep them in that position. It doesn't matter who the man is standing behind the pulpit.
That's
you
right.
know?
Well said. Well said. Very, very true. Thank you for your questions and interaction today. Our time is gone. We hope it's been helpful today.